dad was kind of funny. He used to kid me. He said, I want you to stay within 500 miles. I think Miami was 497. But I looked at a bunch of schools, and I went out to Miami, and I fell in love with the campus, and I fell just in love with everything about it.
Not only is John Miller the president programming NBC Sports and NBC Sports Network, we've got a lot in common. We both went to high school in the same city, Bethesda, Maryland. We both then went 500 miles west to Miami, joined the same fraternity. We both worked at NBC. John started there on the sales side. I was an intern for the George Michael Sports Machine. And we're both heavily committed to the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. The commonalities are incredible. That's where it ends. John's got a ridiculous amount of responsibility now, overseeing 10,000 plus hours of programming. And my guess is a number of us watched some of that this past weekend as Tiger was a mainstay on TV both Saturday and Sunday afternoon. We started our conversation with John talking about his role in developing NBC Sports Ventures.
The reason for how Ventures came about is because right after I took the job on NBC Sports, we lost baseball, and I had to find I had a new boss in Dick Ebersol, and he came in and got rid of a lot of people and kind of challenged me to develop some new programming without a lot of money to spend. So that's really what the genesis was, and that's how we got into it.
And is that group on a daily basis? I mean, is that looking at current sports and properties and looking at what hasn't been, I guess, executed from an existing sport? Or is it even, let's go find the next thing?
Well, I think there's a little bit of both. And I think that they've got some real successes under their belts. Tahoe, the American Century Golf Tournament on Lake Tahoe, has been around since 1991, I guess. Our first year, out of baseball. And, it's been around. This is going to be its 28th year coming up. So they look at stuff like that. But then they've created rugby properties. They've created dog shows. They've created other golf tournaments. They've created poker events. I mean, and stuff that's still on the air and stuff that's taken a hiatus but will come back. And then they're looking at creating new stuff. So there's a lot to that owned, what we call the owned properties and ventures business that Gary Quinn runs for me.
Is there a new event or venture that somebody else has done along the way? Doesn't even have to be live now, that you look at and say, wow, it's just a great idea of just foresight of it?
I'd have to think a little bit about that. There's not been a lot of created events that I've seen out there. I mean, we're obviously all watching the e-gaming space and seeing what happens there, but I haven't really seen a whole lot of new events that are out there that have really sustained the way ours have. So it's tough. I'd have to think about what's out there and take a look at what some examples might be, but I'm sure there's some. Clearly on the college side, there have been some college events that have done pretty well for those guys. But I think that for the most part, we're the only guys out there who really do this kind of stuff.
It's funny. One of my questions down the list here was about e-gaming, and it only took 2 minutes to get into it already. It will be interesting to see when e-gaming actually hits network TV for the first time, and probably way sooner than we all think. Or at least,
yeah, no, I think you might see it in the next year to 18 months. I think people are going to see if it flies. I don't necessarily believe it belongs on a linear platform. I think it's much more of a digital play or a regional play than a national broadcast play. But we'll see. I certainly give it a shot.
So speaking of the linear versus digital aspect of e-gaming, there's a lot more people out there that are broadcasting. And so when you guys are looking at just programming, you've got some other partners or competitors that you used to think about were partners. Now they're competitors or probably trying to figure out ways to use all of your expertise and programming skills and relationships to work with, or it seems like a different marketplace than it was 5 years ago or even 2 years ago.
Well, it changed. You're absolutely right, David. It's changed so much. I mean, guys who used to be your arch competitors now, in some cases, are your partners on things. We have a great working relationship on Fox when it comes to NASCAR. We have a great working relationship with CBS when it comes to the PGA Tour. We've worked, closely with those guys on those kind of properties, and it works out very well. On the linear platform between Fox, CBS, NBC, and ESPN, we all are kind of in the business. We all kind of value our properties and the business in a similar way. And now we're finding that not only when we value our business, proposals, do we have to value against them, but you have to value how the tech companies are doing it. How does Amazon see this? How does Facebook see this? How does Netflix or Hulu or Twitter or someone like that, do they become a factor, and are they someone you have to think about might be a potential bidder? We still have distinct advantages in the fact that on the broadcast side, we're in 210 affiliates, and we reach over 125 million people. Mm-hmm. Our cable network, NBCSN, now is in 85 million homes, only 2 million homes behind ESPN.
Wow.
So those are distinct advantages that we have, and then we have certain properties that really define us, starting with the Olympics and then Sunday Night Football, the NHL, the Premier League. Those kind of properties really make a big difference for us.
When I started doing this pod at the beginning of the year, I was interested to see, were the folks that I would talk to, will they have come from 8 different jobs and switched careers, and did they jump from a technology to a startup to a big business, and everyone's a little bit different. You're an NBC lifer. You've been there.
Well, it's probably because I couldn't get a job anywhere else. I've been in a lot of different parts of NBC. Yep. Throughout my career. I started off as the first NBC maven in 1978 when I left Oxford. And that a maven was someone that NBC had decided they were going to train in all the different aspects of the television stations business, which at the time, NBC was owned by RCA, and the television stations business was probably the single biggest, most important revenue driver of the NBC television business, more than network, more than radio, more than anything else they had. So they decided that I was going to be the one that they trained in all these different aspects, with the goal that eventually I would run one of their local television stations. And so I spent a good amount of time learning research and sales service and traffic and operations and business affairs and news and all the different aspects that go into running a local television station. And eventually I did a lot of work up here in New York initially, and then they sent me back down to DC, which was my home. And I spent 3 years as a local salesman for WRC-TV in Washington, selling local television there. And then from there, I jumped up and sold Spot for NBC Spot in New York, which is basically selling to national advertisers local inventory. And so I sold for all the NBC-owned and operated television stations and did that for 3 years. And then in 1984, I met a man named Jim Burnett, who was running sports sales for NBC, and we had met, we had met earlier in 1983 at the Orioles World Series games against the Phillies, and he proceeded to tell me about selling network sports, which I really didn't have any knowledge or familiarity with. I knew that, NBC as a network had a lot of sports programming, but I didn't really understand the sales equation, and got to know him and learn the business and spent a lot of time kind of trying to understand it. And then in 1985, late 84, early 85, he brought me out of spot sales into network sports sales, which for a kid who loves to sell, who loves television, and who loves sports, was the trifecta. And I did that until 1988. And then moved over into the sports division itself, where I got into program planning and development, scheduling, acquisition, all those different areas, working there. And that's really, I've been in the sports division since 1988.
And when I'm interested of why you went to Miami, because I'm going to go back here a second, coming from Bethesda, Maryland, and as we talked earlier, I grew up in Rockville, Maryland, went to school in Bethesda, Maryland, and did the same journey 8 hours west to do that. But you said three things. You love to sell, you love TV, you love sports. Did you have that in high school? Did you have that Oxford?
No, I didn't. When I was at Miami, I created my own business and was very involved in developing a product here in America called Smashball, which a lot of people would probably know as Kadima, which is a beach game with two big wooden paddles and a little rubber ball. And I actually sold that throughout my last 2 years at Miami and put myself through school managing sales for that, and it had become very successful. But I knew that was not going to be a career. But that really opened up my eyes to sales. There was a lot of cold calling that you had to do, selling, and it was the only product that we had, so that also was challenging. But I enjoyed selling. My dad was a salesman, and I had a lot of respect for the sales process, and understand that if you can sell, there's always going to be a role for you somewhere. And I didn't have the brains or the aptitude to go on and be a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant or anything like that. And so this was a career path that I thought I could follow. And as far as why I went to Miami, my dad was kind of funny. He used to kid me. He said, "I want you to stay within 500 miles." I think Miami was 497. But I looked at a bunch of schools, and I went out to Miami, and I fell in love with the campus, and I fell just in love with everything about it. I was playing tennis at a competitive level in high school and wanted to play tennis in college. But as soon as I got to Miami, I realized I was nowhere nearly good enough to compete at the Division I tennis level, but I still played a lot. But I just went out there and everything about it, clicked. It was an idyllic place. The campus itself was terrific. The offerings and the opportunity to learn, the friends that I made, it just was perfect. I couldn't have asked for more in a university.
I've got to go back to Smashball. Where did you come up with the idea of it?
Well, I didn't come up with the idea of it. When I was, this is kind of it's a long roundabout story, but when I was a sophomore at Miami, we had gone away to spring break. And I ended up getting very lucky, and I won some money at Hi-Li, and there was a guy selling Boast shirts. I don't know if you remember what Boast shirt were. But they have what they call the Japanese maple leaf on the shirt, but everybody knew it was a marijuana leaf. And I ended up, I was fascinated by this, and so I ended up, buying about 300 shirts from the manufacturer, having them shipped back to Oxford, and created a business selling those shirts when I was at Miami, and ended up, branching out and having them sold at different campuses. And then that summer, I was at a trade show with the guys from Boast, and I met these guys who had just started importing this game from Israel called Smashball, and they were based in Washington, D.C. And they were really nice guys, and they had a cool product, but they had no idea how to sell. And my feeling was, this is a great opportunity for me to get involved at the ground floor. I didn't want to, sell shirts any longer or tennis apparel. And so they brought me on, and I started selling and working for them while I was at Miami. And I would spend a lot of my weekends on the road, traveling and going and selling this product. And eventually, by the end of my junior year, we had sold over 100,000 sets. That was more than enough to put me through school and then some. And it really taught me a lot about the business. But I went to all the little beach towns up and down the East Coast and then throughout Florida and North Carolina and Ocean City and Rehoboth and Delaware and the Jersey Shore. And then eventually branched out and sold to some department stores and some mass market retailers, and it became a pretty successful business. And then they eventually sold the company. But I had moved on. I had graduated from Miami by that time and moved on into the role at NBC.
And how? It's a great story. Great side story. And how did you find that first job at NBC?
I had a cousin who was a rep for Metro Media Television, which owned Channel 5 in Washington and owned a station in Chicago, NYW in New York. I think it's KTLA in Los Angeles. I'm not sure what the Metro Media station was, now a Fox station. And he sold national advertising. And so when I was getting ready to graduate from Miami, he said, you know, you should look into getting into the television sales business. So I interviewed with the Metro Media station in Washington to be a salesman, and they were going to put me in sales service and traffic, and I really wanted to sell. So while they offered me the job, I realized that's not what I wanted to do. I really wanted to sell. And so I proceeded to reach out to the different affiliates in the DC area, and WRC gave me an interview, a guy named Jim Martz, who was the general sales manager at WRC. I was 21 at the time, so I didn't know anything really about the business. He sent me up to New York to meet a guy named Bud Hirsch, who ran the stations group, who ended up becoming a godfather for me and a real mentor in the business, and is probably one of the smartest guys I ever worked for. And he decided that I was the guy he was going to start this new program with. So I met with him and a bunch of his other senior executives, and they gave me the chance to be the maven, where I would spend several months learning the business and then eventually go to one of the local stations, and Washington was the one, and become a local salesman. And when I first moved to back home, my list, as they call it, was the Yellow Pages and the city of Baltimore. So any business that I wanted to chase down in Baltimore was mine, and then the Yellow Pages. So anybody who wasn't already on the air was basically fair game. And to me, that was ideal, and that's how it all got started.
That is cold calling 101.
Yeah. I didn't mind it. You know, people say no to you all the time, and you just have to get yourself back up. But that was okay. I happened to be a huge Orioles fan. I was a big baseball fan. And at that time in the late 70s, the Orioles were a very competitive team. And so I loved going up to Baltimore because I would go and call on the agencies during the day, and I would, you know, catch an Orioles game at night. So for me, that was heaven. And I would be up there 2 or 3 days a week. And, you know, the sales guys who I went to work with were much, much older than I was, and none of them really wanted to travel that much. So the fact that I would get in the car and drive to Baltimore, which is a 45-minute drive, was not a big deal to me. They had no interest in doing that. So that was fine.
I always said if I went back to Miami and had the ability to take one class, it would be an improv class, because I feel like we use it just every single day in communications. It sounds like for you it's sales, but improv is part of that too.
Well, it is, and you know, the ability to deal with people and communicate. I had some great, you know, profs and teachers at Miami who to this day I think a lot about. I had Robert Thornton, who was my marketing professor. I had a guy named Wayne Staten, who was still at Miami, still in Oxford, who was my business law professor and ended up becoming a great friend. John Maggard, who wrote the Advertising 101 book. Bruce Olson, who was the finance prof. I mean, those are guys who really kind of helped shape me and shape my career, who I got a lot out of at Miami.
Yeah, and I remember certainly Bruce Olson. What about, and we've talked before, because Rick Dudley, who's CEO here at Octagon, and you guys know each other for a long time, you run into a bunch of Miamians out there, just in the everyday marketplace?
I do. You know, there are a bunch of us who keep in contact, not as much as it used to. I still am involved in, I do some alumni work here for them and stuff like that. I would go to college fairs and talk about Miami and host things here, but not as much as I used to. But there are a handful of guys. Rick is certainly one. There are a bunch of former Miamians who are out there who we keep in touch with now and then.
As the back to kind of present day NBC, as the marketplace or media landscape changes, what for you is the most challenging, or for the team, in terms of staying up with? You've got unbelievable A-type properties and programming already, and so just continuing to push the envelope for each one of them, balanced with, as you mentioned earlier, finding the next great thing?
Well, I think there's a lot of things in play. I think what's really important is to make sure that the properties that we broadcast and showcase get the proper credit that they do from a measurement standpoint. One of the big challenges out there is that it used to be people just would watch programming on their televisions, and so you'd get the Nielsen rating, and it would be pretty cut and dried, and that was it. But now people have so many alternatives in the way they consume media, whether it's watching on a tablet, a desktop, a mobile phone. You just have to make sure that you get properly credited for all that stuff, because that's how you value the property to an advertiser, and that's also how you value the property before you go to bid on it. So being able to make sure that measurement is accurate is key. And then it's also key that you learn to take advantage of these different technologies. The Premier League is one property that I'm especially, you know, proud of at NBC, because we've taken that, which has been around for a long time, but we've really made it must-watch television. But while we put 250 games on NBC and NBCSN, there are another 130 games out there that people wouldn't get to see. So we've developed a new program through our Gold opportunity to really make that fly. And that's an opportunity for people to consume more of it and really go deeper. And one of the things that I think that NBC Sports does so well, and one of the reasons why we have so many long-term partnerships, like the Olympics, like the Premier League, like Notre Dame football, like the French Open, like the NHL, is that we super serve those fans. And we spend a lot of time focused on how we can super serve those fans through our broadcast, marketing, promotion, digital opportunities, you name it.
How much of that super serving is just straight storytelling? In terms,
it's a huge part of what we do. It's a huge part of what we do. And we've got, you know, that's a legacy that goes way back to Dick Ebersol and, you know, a lot of the people there. But we spend a lot of time, you know, making sure we can tell good stories. And our talent is all driven that way, but so are the producers. And it's not just the producers and on-air talent, but it's also people in our marketing group and in our PR group and our communications group. We want to constantly be telling stories and giving people a reason to watch and to spend time with us and support our properties.
How about that Smashball Kadima story? Unexpected. That is entrepreneurship and being a go-getter in college. The only one I can remember like that is my college roommate, Gino Christianoulias, who was selling Cutco knives via fax machine in college. Both of those guys, 4 stars for pulling that stuff off. I did really like when John figured out the combination of 3 passions, sports, sales, and TV, and took that into his professional career. It just shows you don't need to start out knowing everything, but experience and responsibility along the way drives you and guides you into a place you end up going. He also talks about storytelling. In almost every conversation, we talk about storytelling. So important. Hope everyone enjoys the week. See you at Skipper's. Maybe this time try a gyro and fries combo.